Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Alice Bryant, and Anna Mateo. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Airlines in Ethiopia, China, and Indonesia grounded Boeing 737 MAX 8 aircraft on Monday, after one of the planes crashed in Ethiopia, killing 157 people. Ethiopia Airlines said Monday the flight recorders from the plane had been found. The Boeing 737 MAX 8 crashed 6 minutes after takeoff on Sunday from Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa. The plane was headed to Nairobi, Kenya, when it crashed into a field in clear weather. Investigators are hoping the recorders, also called black boxes, will provide information about what might have caused the crash. Red Cross workers picked through the wreckage spread over a wide area in search of human remains. Ethiopian authorities are leading the investigation with help from teams from the United States, Kenya, and other nations. The Sunday crash was very similar to one last year involving a Boeing 737 MAX 8 belonging to Indonesia's Lion Air. That crash killed 189 people when the Lion Air plane went down shortly after takeoff from Indonesia's capital, Jakarta. Indonesian investigators have not yet identified a cause for the Lion Air crash. The head of Ethiopia Airlines said there were no known problems with its aircraft before Sunday's flight. It had received the plane in November, and records showed it had flown just 1,200 hours. The latest crash was likely to renew questions about the 737 MAX 8. It is the newest version of Boeing's popular passenger aircraft, first introduced in 1967. Ethiopia Airlines said it had decided to ground its remaining four 737 MAX 8 planes as an extra safety precaution. The company had been using five of the planes and expected to receive 25 more from Boeing. China's Civil Aviation Administration said it had ordered Chinese-based airlines to ground all 737 MAX 8 aircraft. Officials said the action was ordered to fit a policy of zero tolerance for security risks. China Southern Airlines is one of Boeing's biggest buyers of 737 MAX 8 aircraft. In Indonesia, officials ordered the country's 737 MAX 8 planes grounded to carry out inspections. Boeing said it did not plan to issue any new guidance to plane operators following the crash. The company said it was sending a technical team to the crash site to assist investigators. In a statement, Boeing said it was deeply saddened to learn of the passing of the passengers and crew on the Ethiopian Airlines plane. The company always puts safety first, the statement said. It added that Boeing was taking every measure to fully understand all information about the crash. People from 35 countries died in the Ethiopia Airlines crash. Kenya lost 32 people, more than any other country. The United Nations estimated that at least 21 people connected to the organization were killed in the crash. They were thought to be traveling to a major UN environmental meeting set to start Monday in Nairobi. I'm Brian Lynn.
Some desert flowers stay dormant for many years until the right weather conditions come along. That is exactly what is happening right now in the state of California. It is experiencing a superbloom, a rare happening in which huge amounts of desert flowers open at the same time. The state's rainy winter, which was followed by warm weather, has brought endless fields of wildflowers to its Anza Borrego Desert. The colors are so bright that they can be seen from hundreds of meters high in the mountains. This is the state's second superbloom in 2 years. Usually, superblooms are much rarer. In California, superblooms usually happen about once every 10 years in one area. They have been happening even less often because of years-long drought conditions. The 2017 superbloom was the best and brightest the Anza Borrego Desert State Park had seen in 20 years. It was so big that it could be seen from outer space. The bloom brought huge crowds to Borrego Springs, a town of 3,500 people that sits next to the park. There is a chance that the 2019 superbloom could create an even bigger, better show of nature's beauty. Betsy Nock is executive director of the Anza Borrego Desert Natural History Association, which follows the blooms. She told the Associated Press, "There's just an abundance in where it's blooming, and it's coming in waves." Nock recently saw hundreds of people in the fields trying to capture the beauty in pictures. Stephen Rodding drove to the desert with his girlfriend from the city of Carlsbad, north of San Diego. The two were there to take pictures after a friend told Rodding that this year's superbloom was better than the one in 2017. "It's unreal," Rodding said. "It's just like they said, so beautiful." Many of the flowers are pink, purple, yellow, and white. There are the bright pink Bigelow's monkeys, purple sand verbena, white and yellow evening primrose, and the desert lilies. The lilies bloomed extremely early this season, in December. That was a sign that a superbloom might come. Bright orange poppy flowers are also covering the sides of Southern California highways. Jim Dice is with the Steele Burnand Anza Borrego Desert Research Center, part of the University of California Natural Reserve System. He said that right now the flowers are a painting of colors in many of the areas. So far, 6 times the amount of rain has fallen in the Anza Borrego Desert this weather season compared to last year, Dice said. If insects and freezing temperatures stay away, the beautiful flowers could spread to other areas into the spring. I'm Alice Bryant.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Measles can spread easily from person to person, but it is a fully preventable disease. The World Health Organization notes that a safe, effective vaccine has protected billions of children against measles over the past 50 years. However, all that progress is now at risk. Catherine O'Brien is the Director of Immunization, Vaccines, and Biologicals at the WHO. She says that progress is at risk because of a failure to vaccinate children in all parts of the world.
Measles as a virus is one of the most contagious infections that there is. For every case of measles that occurs in a setting where people are not immune, 9 to 10 additional cases will occur simply because of exposure to that case.
Measles is a virus. It lives in the nose and throat mucus of an infected person. It can spread to others through coughing and sneezing, reports the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Measles is spread through droplets in the air. The virus can live for up to 2 hours on surfaces where the infected person coughed or sneezed. If other people touch the surface or breathe the same air, they can get sick. Signs of measles include high body temperature, coughing, runny nose, red watery eyes, small white areas on the inside of the mouth, a discoloration of the skin. It begins on the face and spreads downward. A skin rash is the clearest sign that a person has the disease. However, the person can be contagious for up to 4 days before the rash appears. So the infected person may not know they are sick and then pass the virus to others. The WHO says 229,000 cases of measles were reported last year worldwide. But WHO officials are not sure of the exact number. They say the number of reported cases represents less than 10% of actual cases. So the disease is infecting millions of other people. And millions are not getting vaccinated. In 2017, the WHO reported that more than 19.9 million people were not protected against the measles. Katrina Kurtzinger is a WHO medical officer in the expanded program on immunization. She says there have been measles outbreaks in all parts of Africa, including the island of Madagascar. The WHO reports that in poor countries, many children do not get vaccinated because they do not live near health clinics. In wealthier countries, the measles vaccine is widely available. But some parents sometimes choose not to have their children vaccinated because of claims that the vaccine is dangerous. In the United States, health officials are urging parents to get their children vaccinated for measles. Some parents object to vaccines for moral, religious, personal, or philosophical reasons. U.S. health experts announced 19 years ago that the disease was no longer a threat to the public. Yet 18 states give parents the right not to vaccinate their children. One such state is Washington in the Pacific Northwest. A recent outbreak of measles there has health officials working hard to contain it. On February 5th, there were 50 cases of measles reported in Washington. In the U.S., rural areas often have higher numbers of unvaccinated children. But there are also large numbers in some big cities, such as Houston, Austin, and Seattle. Measles makes people very sick, and it is especially dangerous for young children. It can lead to other health problems, such as pneumonia or encephalitis. Encephalitis is a swelling or enlargement of the brain. It can be deadly or lead to permanent disability. Doctors, including the U.S. Surgeon General Jerome Adams, are urging parents to get their children vaccinated.
As the United States Surgeon General, I want everyone to know that the best protection against measles is getting vaccinated.
And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. President Ulysses Grant served two terms in office. His administration was marked by corruption. The president himself was not linked directly to any of the incidents, but he was friends with dishonest members of the cabinet and Congress. Jack Weitzel and Tony Riggs tell how Grant's problems affected the Republican Party in the presidential election of 1876.
The American people were very disappointed with President Grant. He was the military hero of the Civil War. He had led the Union Army of the North to victory over the Confederate Army of the South. His popularity dropped, however, during his presidency. Grant was not an effective political leader, nor was he able to control the men around him. The American people also were worried about the nation's economic situation. A serious depression had begun during Grant's second term. Many people were out of work. They blamed the ruling Republican Party.
The state and congressional elections of 1874 were an important turning point. Republicans were shocked by the results. For the first time in 18 years, the Democratic Party won control of the House of Representatives. They won 169 seats. The Republicans won 109. Democrats also won control of 23 of the 35 state governments. These included several northern states where people were tired of Republican rule.
Important changes also were made in the South. Democrats won control of southern state governments from radical Republicans. One of these states was Mississippi. White Democrats there began organizing groups called White Leagues. These groups wanted to prevent blacks from voting for radical Republicans. They started riots in which many blacks were killed. They also used economic power against blacks. These efforts succeeded. most blacks were too afraid to vote. The Democrats took control of both the Mississippi legislature and the governor's office. Similar actions with similar results took place in other southern states.
As Grant's second term came to an end, he began to talk about the possibility of another 4 years in the White House. Republican politicians were firmly opposed. They blamed Grant for the party's defeats in state and congressional elections. Grant had to give up any hope of a third term. Congressman James Blaine seemed to have the best chance of winning the Republican presidential nomination in 1876. Blaine had been Speaker of the House of Representatives when the Republicans controlled Congress. He was powerful, and he had many supporters. Some Republican leaders, however, questioned his honesty. Blaine fought this criticism with an emotional speech in Congress.
When the Republican Party convention opened in Cincinnati, Ohio, Blaine was the leading candidate for the presidential nomination. He expected to win the first day. There was a wild demonstration of support when his name was put before the convention. But before the voting could begin, the lights went out. Some delegates believed Blaine's opponents were responsible. These opponents worked all night to get other delegates to change their support from Blaine to another candidate. When the delegates voted the next morning, Blaine did not have enough votes to win the nomination.
However, after six ballots, Blaine appeared ready to win. To stop him, his opponents needed to unite behind another candidate. One of these candidates was Rutherford Hayes, the governor of Ohio. Hayes had fewer enemies than the other candidates, so he became the compromise candidate for delegates hoping to stop Blaine. On the seventh ballot of the convention, Rutherford Hayes captured the Republican nomination.
The Democratic Party met in St. Louis, Missouri. Delegates nominated Samuel Tilden, the governor of New York. Tilden had led the fight to end dishonesty in government in New York State. He had ousted a group called the Tweed Ring, which controlled New York City politics for years. Democrats said he was the man to end dishonesty in government in Washington. Republicans campaigned by denouncing the Democratic Party. They called it the party of Southern rebellion and treason. Instead, they said, vote for the Republican Party, the party that had saved the Union. Democrats campaigned by attacking Republican dishonesty. They blamed Republicans for the nation's economic problems, and they promised better times for everyone if their candidate was elected.
The presidential election of 1876 was very close. By midnight of election day, the results seemed to show that Democrat Samuel Tilden was the winner, Republican Rutherford Hayes went to bed believing he had lost. However, the Republicans quickly saw that the electoral votes of three southern states could decide the winner. In the American presidential system, whoever wins the most popular votes in a state usually gets all the electoral votes of that state. In 1876, the electoral votes of three states, Florida, Louisiana, and South Carolina, were enough to give the White House to one candidate or the other.
Each party claimed victory in these three states. Each accused the other of stealing votes and counting ballots unfairly. Finally, the two parties agreed to form an electoral committee to decide who had won the disputed votes. The committee was supposed to include seven Republicans, seven Democrats, and one independent. But before it could meet, the independent member resigned. A Republican took his place. The Republicans had a majority.
The committee first debated the disputed votes of Florida. After much discussion, the eight Republicans on the committee voted to accept the votes of Florida's Republican electors. They rejected a proposal to investigate the way the votes were counted in the state. They said there was not enough time for a full investigation. The same thing happened with the disputed votes of Louisiana and South Carolina. The Republicans on the committee voted to count the Republican electors. The Democrats voted to count the Democratic electors. In each case, the Republicans won by a vote of 8-7.
As a result, Rutherford Hayes gained the electoral votes of all three states. This gave him enough to win the election. Democrats were furious. Democrats in many states began organizing party militia groups. They said they would fight, if necessary, to prevent the Republicans from stealing the presidency. The situation seemed very tense and dangerous. Many feared the start of another civil war. Negotiations finally provided a peaceful solution.
Representatives of the two parties met secretly to work out a compromise. The Democrats agreed to permit Republican Rutherford Hayes to be sworn in as president. In return, Hayes agreed to end federal support of radical Republican governments in the South. He promised to name Southerners to his cabinet and other important jobs. And he said he would provide more federal aid for schools and railroads in the South. As part of the agreement, Hayes promised not to act aggressively to support the civil rights of black Southerners.
Hayes' opponent, Democrat Samuel Tilden, did not oppose the agreement. Tilden was an old man. His health was poor. He agreed that 4 years of Rutherford Hayes would be better than 4 years of civil war. So it was that Rutherford Hayes became the 19th president of the United States.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.